Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We have. I woke up this morning and thinking about what am I going to do today here on the Mark Steiner Show. We thought, well, maybe we'll put on a pre-recorded thing and do something else because I had some work to do. And I said, you don't know, but this, the world is in such a chaotic place at the moment. I said, we can't do that. And what came to my head was Marvin Gaye. And all I kept thinking and singing was, what's going on? So we have gathered a panel to kind of wrestle with what is happening on our earth. What is Mother Earth saying? What's happening in our country when we go after unions like this? What's happening in the Middle East when we can support one group and not another when they're doing the exact same thing? What is happening to our planet and people? So we are joined here by three very interesting, very different thinkers on the air for us this hour. Kevin Zeese, Craig Chalquist, and Reverend Mother Meredith Moyes. More about that in a minute. First, we're going to take a break for all of you listeners in Baltimore, Maryland, to see what's happening on the roads around this city. And make sure that the local folks here listening get a chance to get home safe. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. And in the words of one of my favorite philosophers and thinkers and entertainers... Marvin Gaye said it best. What's going on? We have to figure that out.
You got your Marvin Gaye voice going there, Mark. You lowered it down a little bit.
Much lower. It gets fall to the ground. But it is. We are in that place. When you see what's happening in Japan,
yes,
with the tsunami, with all the things happening around the globe, from Haiti to Chile to all the places where the earth is erupting, New Zealand, what happened in Australia, what happened a few years ago when all those people died in the tsunami, all the things that are happening, how the earth is kind of speaking to us. What does that mean that the earth is speaking to us? Yes. What's happening there? What's happening that we can't put our hands around the energy needs of the future and deal with it in a sane way in the face of all that we know that we're looking at in the future? When we see what's happening in this country and so many people and more people are living in poverty, more and more people of color are in prison, and 0.6% of the world's population is African-American, and 8% of all people in prison in the world are African-American men in our own world here behind us. Yes. We look at the Middle East, and we lay wreaths at the feet of the Egyptian military because they ousted Nasser, and we watch Libya and in Bahrain and in Yemen killing people right and left. Nobody's lifting a finger to stop that.
At all.
So what is going on? Where is our society taking us? Where are we being taken? Where can we take our society? What can we do about it? And why are we? How are we in the place we're in? And, folks, we have three very interesting people here with us today. Not that we don't always, but I really thought a lot about different people to come in. And this would be the beginning of our What's Going On panels we want to have, just to talk about what's going on. Kevin Zeese is with us. He's director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics. He's joined us many times before. His fight against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and his fight for economic and social justice in this country. And we are joined for the first time by two guests who have never been with us before. I'm happy to have both of them here. Joining us by phone from California is Dr. Craig Chalquist, who is a faculty member in the Department of Consciousness and Transformative Studies at John F. Kennedy University and adjunct research and psychology instructor at the California Institute of Integral Studies. He's written books like Ecotherapy, Healing the with Nature in Mind, Terra Psychology, The Soul of Place, Storied Lives, Discovering and Experiencing Your Personal Myth, and as a way of total transparency, he's also my lovely wife Valerie's instructor at the JFK University in Ecopsychology, so we should put that on the table. It's too incestuous here. And Reverend Mother Meredith Moyes, who is a priest in the North American Old Catholic Church. She's an activist, a teacher, and a writer. And Mother Meredith has called on the show many times. We met each other when we both received the James Baldwin Awards just a month or so ago, and we met in person. And all of you bring something very different. Kevin, through your political struggles, and Craig, with your work with Earth and psychology and mass psychology and the human mind, and Reverend Mother Meredith Moyce brings this spiritual aspect and grounding of women and people of color. And so this is a kind of a circle to talk about where are we and why are we where we are. Folks, I want you to join us at 410-319-8888 as a spirit, thought, and mind moves you to join us. Craig, let me just begin. I was reading your website before we jumped on the air, and one of the things that was a line struck out. You have many wonderful lines in the stuff that you've written, but you wrote a piece about some of the stuff you teach, and you wrote about the evolution of our relationship with our reactive planet. Was a line that really just hit me. I'd like you just for a second to talk about the work you do and what do you think is going on with Mother Earth and us at this moment?
Oh, you would ask me first. I mean, I like the Marvin Gaye music.
Me too. We can put it back on.
Oh, there's so much happening. One of the basic ideas behind eco-psychology, which is the study of our psychological relationship to the environment, is that what happens with the environment and what happens with human psychology are reflections of each other. They're not separate the way it's sometimes held, particularly in our in the dominant culture, you know. And so, you know, that a word that you used actually was erupt earlier, and that stands out for me right now in a big way because of all the things that are happening around the world and within people and in social movements, you know. And I tend to think in terms of those persistent images because they do a good job of pulling together a lot of different realms of experience. And so when I think about, for instance, a comment by Martin Luther King Jr. that a riot is a language of the unheard, mm-hmm. and I think about what's happening with Earth and with what's happening in Libya and here in the United States as well, it makes me wonder what is it that has been repressed or not heard that's forcing its way to the surface so violently that now we have no choice but to listen, you know? And, of course, when something like that happens psychologically, often the results can be quite catastrophic, even though in the long run one might think, well, it's a good thing that voices that have been unheard are finally coming to the surface, and it is a good thing. But when they come that way, then often there's a lot of misery involved, as we're seeing all over the world right now. So that's the sort of – I don't really have a substantive answer to what
No, that's fine.
That's where my thoughts are going with all this. And also I received an email from a friend in Japan yesterday, and if we get time on the show, I'd like to read just a couple of paragraphs because it's an on-the-ground, from-the-heart view of what's actually going on over there.
Oh, in a few minutes, I'd like to have you do that. That would be wonderful. And I have a message from a young brother who just flew to Japan to rescue his family. I'll talk about that in a minute as well. Mother Meredith, I mean, when Craig talks about the kind of almost mass psychology of humanity and how we're affected by all this in a way that is beyond the individual.
I think that part of the issue is that society, particularly Western society, refuses to see the connection with human beings, mind, body, and spirit together. And for so long in the Western world, spirit and body, mind and body were considered separate, particularly God and human beings totally separate. And what we're seeing now is that the earth is waking us up, and individually we are waking up. Now, people are waking up to different realities. Charlie Sheen's reality is different than other people's reality, you know. But, I mean, as I was sharing with my godmother, people seem to be reacting to the changes in the earth in a different way. Some people are becoming very internal. Some people are becoming very external. And I think that part of the thing that we need to look about is if earth is our mother, and we know we're all earth people here, how have we treated our own mothers? Conversely, how have we treated women in the past couple centuries, in the past couple thousand years? Many times we like to rail about how women are treated outside. But if we look at our own culture, you know, you might not have superstructures that are oppressing women overtly now, but you do have this insidious misogynistic culture in our society. You know, where women are constantly denigrated in books, videos, movies, in our neighborhoods, regardless of the complexion of the people that are doing it. So we have to really look about how are we addressing this plight. And also, too, even in our religion, there are some churches, we won't name them, where there are some spiritual institutions, we won't name them, which will not allow women to ascend to natural leadership roles that women have. If women are good enough to bear life, I don't understand why a woman can't sit in a pulpit. That's just me, you know, and some other folks that I know. But these are, you know, issues that we really need to look at, because the earth is crying. And we have to remember we are part of the earth. And this is just another cycle of life. There's been a time on the earth where human beings have not even been on the earth. So we have to decide as a collective, as a race of beings, do we still want to be on the earth and work in cooperation with the earth? And if collectively we say yes, then we will have a future. If we decide collectively no, then the earth will do what she wants to do to survive.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that's been said so far. I would take a little bit another tack at it. I'd say that for a long time we've been living in a fog. And the fog is lifting. And what I mean by fog is the forces of greed.
Yes.
The forces of greed have dominated our communication systems. They've dominated our business elite. And they've dominated our political elite. And there's a disconnect growing and becoming more evident between the people and the government. The poll just came out today that showed that the confidence in the U.S. system of governance is at its all-time low. And I think that's about time. Because really our government has not been able to handle very pressing issues for a long time. The issue of climate change, for example, the evidence has been in for quite a while. No other country on earth really questions it. It's only the United States, and that's because of the fog, the fog of the corporate media, the fog of the big think tanks that are funded by corporations, the phony studies funded by corporations, the fog of greed that the corporate interests want to keep their money coming in no matter how much it harms the government, the fog of our political leaders like President Obama, who takes a lot of money from the nuclear energy industry. They've been his backers from the beginning, and now he planned on giving $35 billion in loan guarantees to the nuclear energy industry. That money should be shifted away from that and put into what's really obvious solutions, and we know the solutions. That's the sad thing about the fog. The fog prevents us from putting in place solutions that we know will work. I mean, whether it goes from health care on single payer, where, you know, 50,000 plus are without health insurance and 45,000 die a year, we know the answer. But the fog, the insurance companies won't let us have it. The fog that funds $20 million the Obama campaign gets $400 million a year back in tax subsidies from the Obama health law. The fog won. It's time for the fog to lift. It's time for Americans to see clearly. It's time for us to stand up. And the principles were there from the beginning. If you go back to our Constitution, there's so in the Bill of Rights, there's so much there that answers the questions, and we violate that right now. You know, one thing I'm doing this weekend is a protest down in Quantico against the Quantico Marines, who are, you know, supposed to uphold and defend the Constitution from forces foreign and domestic. Well, they're violating the Constitution right now. They're torturing somebody, and that's all you can call it is torture. The guy is in solitary for 7 months in Quantico, 10 months total, forced nudity now, not convicted of anything. He's innocent until proven guilty. He's being tortured. Now they're trying to deny us on Sunday the right to go to a war memorial that's right off the road, open to the public every single day. And they're trying to deny us and the vets who are going to lead this memorial service to go to that memorial and lay flowers. What happened to the Constitution's, you know, right of free speech and assembly? I mean, this is the Marines who are supposed to pledge to defend the Constitution. So I hope people come down to Quantico at 2 o'clock this Sunday. It's just off of 95. Just take the Quantico exit. We're right there and join us and stand up for the Constitution. Stand up for Brad.
I think it's quite ironic how you have veterans that want to pay homage and lay these wreaths and these flowers at this monument, but the Westboro Baptist Church can desecrate these military funerals based on their
prejudice
and what perception of what the Christian scriptures say. So I think it's very ironic how you have these groups, again, diametrically opposed. And I feel like also, too, that America, the world, but I'll just speak about America right now because this is where we are, is in a willful blindness. And there are often times where I've talked to people and I'm like, well, where do you live? And people just seem to not want to wake up.
Yes.
They are satiated by food, I mean, the sweeteners and all the stuff in the food, you know, we associate it by entertainment, by sports, and we get fascinated with things that on a cosmic scale really don't matter. And I think that the Earth is saying, okay, well, look, this, I have a problem. I'm going to let y'all know what it
man.
Is.
So, Craig, I'm going to bring you back here since you're on by phone and I can't physically see you. I should get you on Skype and I can see you. We'll do that next time. What do you think happens to the psychology of people in a broader level, on a mass level?
You mean in regard to all the things that are happening now?
Yeah.
I don't have much to add to what the Reverend Mother just said. I think it's a great analysis of what you said about fog, you know. There's a point that I made when I gave a speech at Bioneers recently, and some activists, there was a question and answer afterwards, and I had talked a bit about ecotherapy being what I called a cultural therapeutics, that we need to start thinking about our cultures as clients and patients rather than just individuals, you know, singling people out. And one of the questions was, how can we as activists wake people up? How can we be effective in what we tell people about what's happening to the food and what's happening to the politics and the earth, you know? And one of the points that I made to them that I think might be relevant here is, if people don't have an adequate emotional container to put these terrible truths into, then they will ignore the truths in defense of their own sanity. And so there needs to be some sort of working at the community level so that people can support each other when they hear all this and when they take in all this information, so that they have a way of dealing with it. Otherwise, they simply will not deal with it. They'll change the channel, or they'll go eat something that's not good for them, or whatever their defense is, you know. So I think that notion of defense that comes to us from psychotherapy is a very important thing to keep in mind when we're talking about mass trauma and the psychic numbing that happens in response to it.
That's a great point. Can I comment on that?
Go ahead.
You know, I think that's exactly right. People need to have a way to channel the information into some kind of positive action. I think that's what we're seeing around the world. I mean, the regime of Mubarak falling down, the activities going on in Libya, and the threats in Saudi Arabia and, you know, other, you know, countries, Bahrain and the countries over there, and even the United States. You know, the reaction to the extremist positions that are going in the Midwest, the people getting are upset and starting to show it. I mean, that's a positive. Taking a positive action makes such an incredible difference. I mean, I know people who, you know, recognize these problems that we all face, who are furious that we're facing and don't know how to channel their energy. And I think channeling your energy in a positive way is so good. We are seeing mass civil resistance developing in the United States, a real culture of resistance. Another event this weekend I'll mention on Saturday, we're doing an event at the White House with four vets groups leading an anti-war protest. It's End the Wars, Stop the Lies, Free Bradley Manning is the theme, and there'll be a mass civil resistance led by these four vets groups. I'll be resisting and taking risks myself. And that is positive action, and it's going to lead to more positive action. What happens when you do that kind of thing? We don't expect this, you know, this arrest to end the wars right away, but what you do is we videotape it, we write about it, we share it, and it builds. And we are seeing a culture of resistance building that will change things in the United States too.
Yeah, and if I could make a quick comment on,
go ahead, Craig,
on the back of that, another positive about positive action for me is that it's the opposite of what happens when poorly trained psychotherapists tell people that their political outrage or their outrage about racism or sexism is some sort of a personal problem that needs further analysis in session somewhere, you know. It makes me crazy.
It makes more money for them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that people also, too, have gotten away from the basics in terms of their own spiritual development. And even though I am an old Catholic priest, I do recognize...
A young old Catholic priest.
I do recognize the use of varying spiritual technologies, if you will, to help people cope with the amount of change in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I have to look back to my own life and the amount of change in my life, and my father was an immigrant, and, you know, the immigrant experience, just coming from one place to another. He was an immigrant from Panama. And his sister, my aunt and my godmother, had so much faith. And every morning she would pray the rosary. And that was her way of dealing with the amount of change that she had to deal with on a personal level. And I know people across Baltimore, across the United States, that are employing various spiritual technologies, whether it be Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, Judaic, Hinduism, yoga, Taoism with Qigong and things of that nature to really deal with the changes. And I find that those people who are plugged into their spirituality, who have made an active decision to grow their consciousness, can better deal with change than those who kind of are really caught up in what I would call the wave of mass nothingness. For my hip hop heads, the money, power, respect people. Because as we see, you know, that really ends up being nothing, because money, power, respect, although great, really doesn't guarantee you well-being, health, or happiness. In fact, the person who chanted money, power, respect, that song, Little Kim, ended up in jail. Okay, so that wasn't a happy result for her. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we decide, you know, as a human family, that we're going to cultivate our spirits in the way that is most comfortable for each individual, each group, then I think that we can deal with the mass changes, and ultimately we can heal the earth. Mm-hmm. And the earth can heal us. But if we decide to see ourselves continually separated from each other and the earth, then this split in consciousness will cause mass disruptions. We really need to decide what we're going to do as a human family. Are we going to grow our consciousness and connect with that which is within us? Or are we going to decide to give up and not do anything and to succumb to the forces of greed, anger, and stupidity?
The fog.
Yeah, the fog.
Fog. I like the fog. And Craig, I'm going to use that. That what Mother Meredith was saying almost fits into the things I've seen that you write.
Is he there?
Craig, you still there?
I'm sorry. I missed that.
The things that Mother Meredith was just saying,
yes,
is reminiscent to me of the things I've been reading that you write.
Yes. That splitting of consciousness that she talks about, that seems to really be at the heart of a lot of this. And you don't hear much conversation about that when people are talking about sustainability or geoengineering or developing this or that, all of which perhaps needs to be done at some level. I'm not an expert on all that, but without healing the split where it really occurs in all of us and in our communities, then there's very little chance of really truly long-term sustainable action or repairing our relationship with the earth. And it is a relationship, and that's what I always emphasize to my students as well, that the earth is not a background. It's not
right.
A stage on which human events occur and all that. You know, it's something that we come out of and go back into, and it's part of our consciousness, and we need to be able to relate to it as adults.
It made me think of something today that I called a lot of people this morning about this. Clark Peters, who some of you have seen on The Wire and in Treme, I called him this morning. He's in Treme shooting night. I couldn't join us today. But I talked to him about becoming part of this series with us as well, trying to find different people to come on and talk and think who aren't the usual suspects they usually just have on. Clark's one of those people who's been fighting to have solar panels put on every house in Charles Village as a way to get off the grid and take care of the community.
I'm for that, man.
They've instead of putting money someplace else, put it there. Let's sell back to the BGE and have the government subsidize that instead. And he's an interesting thinker. But I was talking to Maria Broom this morning, and she, who I called Maria Broom, is a former journalist. She is a dancer, a healer, she is an amazing woman. And Maria said, as we're driving in, and Maria is a woman of color, comes out of the community, and she's just an amazing person. And Maria said, one of the things I want to tell you, Mark, about the show tonight, since I can't be there, is that all the negative energy that we put in this society out goes into the earth.
Yes.
And the earth reacts to that.
Yes.
We're not like separate from that.
No, we're not.
We are part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was thinking about the people I've been talking to, interviewed, who run, and cultures who run, and people who run and walk without shoes on. Muta Baruco, who is a mm-hmm. who is a Rastafarian philosopher who was on the show, I remember in the middle of winter he walked into my studio without his in his bare feet through the snow, and he was talking about how. And scientists are now kind of coming around to what he's been saying, which is now that there is a healing energy from the earth to your body that comes through your feet, mm-hmm. and it's all connected. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we are connected that way. And the question that made me think about is, how does that discussion happen so that it doesn't feel, sound like, look like, be interpreted as a fringe discussion? Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah, part – you know, our – our ecotherapy program out here in California and our ecotherapy book, Healing with Nature and Mind, one of the things that I had as an agenda for both was to speak in some of the language of science that seems convincing to some parts of the population. And I like science personally, so it's a good language for me to use. And there is so much research done of the conventional kind, you know, even aside from how we all feel intuitively when we reestablish our contact with the natural world and everything, you know. But there's so much research behind the healing effects psychologically, physically, of anything from gardening to going outside more to being with animals more to if you're in a heated discussion with your partner, you go outside and have it instead of being in a box, mm-hmm. know, a little room, you know. And the evidence has piled up to the point where it's convincing, and there's hardly any contradictory evidence. You know, and it's what we all know, those of us who are interested in all this anyway, but it's good to see that it actually has some numbers around it, you know. And so in terms of making policy and wanting grants and selling programs at universities, we have it now. So we can say, look at all this stuff, all this research that says that it's good for us to be this way, you know. So it seems like that might be one part of opening the discussion and showing that it's not, you know, the woo-woo people that are doing this. You know? Although I've been a happy woo-woo person for like most of my life. But.
Well, you know, it's interesting also for me. You know, I'm not a believer in God or spirits, and I'm an atheist and humanist, and everything you say still rings true with me. I think we are all connected. Mm-hmm. I think there's energy, but connects us all and connects us to the earth. And we don't understand that energy very well at this point, but I think so it's not a God-based philosophy. It's a philosophy, I think, that's based on we'll find more and more fact-based realities. For example, the guy who you mentioned thought that solar energy on every house
Clark
in Charles Village, it's obviously the right thing to do. And, it's staring us in the face. The evidence, the facts are in to support it. We could close down Calvert Cliffs, and then we could gradually get off of coal if we moved in that direction. The problem, of course, is the fog. And what's the advantage of the solar energy approach that he's talking about is it decentralizes power. It shifts power.
Right.
Away from concentrated corporate entities
right.
To the people. And if everybody becomes able to create their own energy on a Charles Village or other neighborhood roof, if parking garages become sources of energy where you plug your car in when you park at a garage, these are all technologies that are available. There's a book out called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free Energy Economy, and he lays out a plan, and it's not the only book, there's other ones, that lays out a plan to make us carbon free and nuclear free by 2035.
We have somebody coming on the show in just a couple of weeks doing an hour on electric cars. And he has developed the battery plug-in that you can put in every shopping center in Maryland.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's so that if you have – you just plug in and it can have them everywhere. They could be
– and if the top floor of the garage is solar panels, they're getting energy in the solar panels, putting right in the car, and people go home.
But Father Exxon wouldn't like that.
Exactly.
I was going to say –
Shift the power.
With gas coming to be $4.
This is the time.
I would really
this is the time.
Love it. But, you know, when we talk about the energy from the earth, the people of the Yoruba people who practice the faith system of Ifa, which is one of the most ancient faith systems on the planet, often refer to the energy coming from Mother Earth as Ashe. And conversely, the Chinese refer to this life energy as qi. And the very interesting thing is that we as human beings, we each have our own ashe. And the earth has ashe. And we get our ashe from the earth and the various things coming from the earth. So that, in terms of indigenous cultures, ancient cultures, that thinking is there. It's just when these cultures and these ideas have been corrupted by other things, that we get this dichotomy of – us not being connected to the earth, or even the thought, dare I say, that the earth is a horrible place and we all need to get to heaven.
Right.
Ooh, the priest said that. And I think that that type of thinking, disconnecting ourselves from the earth, is what got us into this predicament in the first place. The thought process that we have no connection up from the earth and we need to dominate the earth and thereby destroying the earth has put us here. But when we go back to those ancient principles, then we can restore the earth and once again unify with the earth and where we're already coming from.
We have to take a very, very brief break. When we come back, we're going to go right to Samantha, the first caller up. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about this. Are we off somewhere else, or is this reality we're talking? I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. As we're joined by Kevin Sees, Craig Chilquist, and Reverend Mother Meredith Moyes. 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And Samantha, our first caller, will come right to you as soon as we return, and then we'll let Craig Chalkers read that letter from Japan. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are having a conversation about what's going on. What is happening on our planet? What can we do about it? What is the response of human beings? We want you to know here. Join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and ideas. We are joined by Dr. Craig Chalquist, who is a faculty member in the Department of Consciousness and Transformative Studies at John F. Kennedy University in the Bay Area, California, adjunct research and psychology instructor for the California Institute of Integral Arts. Here in the studio, the Reverend Mother Meredith Moyes, priest in the North American Old Catholic Church, an activist, a teacher, and a writer. Kevin Zeese, director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Samantha, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, welcome.
I totally agree with everything everyone is saying, but to play devil's advocate,
please.
Do you think that someone or will look at this as that we're being so egotistic to think that we can save the earth? And then one, or are we being so egotistic that we are think that we're not connected to the earth?
Let me start with Craig, and we'll come over to Mother Meredith. Craig, why don't you start with that?
There's a nice way that Joanna Macy sometimes responds to a similar question. It's a great question, and it's one I think that it's important to keep in the forefront of our minds when we do our work, you know, whether it's activism or education or what have you. And Joanna Macy's way of holding it for her own activity, she's done all kinds of work, I mean, too much to go into here for decades, you know, with people, is she sees it as we're not saving the earth. What we're trying to do is step back and reflect and do what we need to do so that the earth can repair itself. And so it takes us out of that heroic savior top-down controlling posture that has fared so badly throughout human history, and it puts us in a different place of witnessing and listening and participating and understanding that we're in the system ourselves, you know. So I don't know if that totally addresses
that's an interesting response. I like that. Mother Meredith, you wanted to jump in before we go back?
I wanted to say that in terms of the caller, I definitely understand that as a former teacher, working with young men who kind of got programmed by 2012, how can we stop this? This is inevitable. The world is dying and we're all going to die. I think that, one, if we look at history and we look at the movements that really have changed human beings over maybe the last, I'll say, 3,000 years, they've all been started by like one or two people. First, you've got Siddhartha Gautama, also known as the historical Buddha. He started out by meditating under a tree and discovered some truths that were so profound that when he began to preach, he moved so many people that we have a plethora of Buddhists today. And even from my own faith tradition, if we look at the life of Jesus, this was a poor kid from a backwater town in Judea occupied by the Romans. And, you know, even to the point where his own, you know, a good portion of his own people didn't believe he had a message from any type of divinity. They were like, we know your mother. We know your family. What are you talking about? But his truth was so profound that it moved the hearts of not just everyday people, but of some people in power, to the point where he threatened the very structure of his day. It was a very people-centered movement. So I think that if we take that spirit, that type of energy, that we could do the things that we want to do. The faith of a mustard seed can really move mountains, because it's not just about the individual. It's about that changing of consciousness in the individual, such that a group of individuals can come together and make profound change. In essence, that's all that we have here. I mean, history shows that.
You know, and that's been going on. Joanna Macy, he mentioned, another thing that she talks about, which I think is a really brilliant insight, is the great turning.
Yes.
That we are in the midst of a great turning, that people, the consciousness is changing. People are understanding that we have to change the way the culture operates, and I think that's the opposite of fog. That's the forces of good.
Yes.
You know, and I think there are people working that way too. And so even before these eruptions that are happening in Wisconsin and in Egypt and everywhere else, there's been a lot over the last decade or two and more of people gradually coming into this great turning that's really shifting so much of how we deal with each other and how we deal with energy, how we deal with the environment and see ourselves in relation to the earth. There's a big foundation of people who already get it to build on.
And a very funny thing is, not to cut you off, Mark, is that there's a very loud, outspoken conservative talk show host whose name I shall not mention, but his initials are GB. And I was looking at some press the other day, and his ratings have gone down. And I said to myself, why have the ratings gone down? So I looked through the article, and it was like, well, people got tired of him just being a killjoy, just death, 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 destruction, die, and all this crazy stuff that he was saying, and not really offering anything to counter that, not really for real. And people get tired of hearing that day after day after day. And I think that if people can stop listening to that person XYZ, then there is hope. And, you know, shows like Marx and other progressives, and just progressive in mind and consciousness, can really change the way this country works and conversely the world.
I'm going to go to the phones, get some other call. A lot of people are calling in. We get some of them on the line here with us, tell you some news that just came across the wire. I'll tell you now, and then we'll go to Mike, and then we'll hear the letter from Japan. Mother Meredith brought this to our attention during the break. I looked it up on the web. The House of Representatives just voted to defund public broadcasting and NPR. And in that vote, the vote was 228 to 192. One Republican just voted present. Seven Republicans voted. All but seven Republicans voted for the measure, and all Democrats voted against it. But it also, in that measure, said that public radio stations locally, like this one, could not use federal funds to buy NPR programming. That was also it. So this fits into the whole scheme of, to me, the whole scheme of the corporatizing of everything we have in America, rather than having a public free media that belongs to a community that is not controlled
by. They don't want the power to shift. They don't want the power to shift.
Then it's
they like the fog.
The fog is them, man.
Fog, I love it. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Don't turn your lights on in the fog.
Good afternoon, folks. I'm going to try and clear away some fog. give me the opportunity. I want to talk about this interconnection of human beings. On the one hand, I think it's real. On the other hand, it don't exist. The wealthy rule us, and if you get in the way, they shoot you. First, they shut you up, and if you don't shut up enough, they shoot somebody. There's thousands of years of history that document this.
That's right.
If we want to organize society so that we could all be together as brothers and sisters and take care of each other, which I think is a human impulse,
yes,
we have to take over this damn society, take it away from the wealthy, and organize a cooperative society.
Yep.
I think that that the way things are going now, I think that You know, if we don't change course in terms of this these ecological happenings and challenges, then Mother Earth will give us that final option. Either y'all gonna work together or I'm gonna get rid of you. And I think that, you know, when we look at what's happening in Japan, and, you know, okay, first the earthquake was really bad, then the tsunami was crazy, and then, oh man, the nuclear stuff. And I thought to myself, I said, is this the only place on the planet? I'm not sure. Somebody call in and correct me if I'm wrong, where you had, first you had the atomic bomb, which was introduced by
United States.
Yep. And then this whole accident with nuclear power. And I'm like, what is this lesson for humanity? Because this is not just about Japan. This is about humanity. What is our lesson here? We are not working with the Earth. And she will either force us to cooperate or else. And besides the fact that if we save ourselves, we are saving the Earth, because we are the Earth. We are of the Earth. You know, in the Ash Wednesday liturgy, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So even in our religious institutions, we recognize that. We really need to put that into action now.
I mean, the caller is right. It's the wealth class versus the people. There's been an ongoing class struggle for decades, and only one side's been fighting, and that's the wealthy. And that's why now we have the top 1% controlling 95% of the wealthy in the United States, and that being true around the world with the neoliberalism taking hold around the world. And that, you know, there's two things. If we want to start to get the budget right, there are two things we have to confront. One is the wealth divide.
Yes.
You have to confront that or you're not going to get there. And the second is the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
If you don't end these wars, you know, and unfortunately President Obama put a budget out where 66% of discretionary spending was not going to be cut. That's the wars, intelligence, and domestic security. If you don't face 66%, that's the part that needs to be cut most. That's where all the money is. And if you don't face up to that, everything else gets cut, including NPR. They wouldn't cut the marching band in the military, which is $500 million, but they're cutting NPR, which is less than that.
Which is raising the consciousness of people.
Let me read this question. Then we have Tyrone. Let me read this question. Then I want Craig to read the letter from Japan, and then we'll go to Tyrone, our next caller up. Writing in here, chatting in, Christina writes in, do the guests think that globalization is helping or hindering efforts to bring people together? Because on the one hand, it seems like Japan is closer than ever to us, just a short plane ride away, with pictures constantly being broadcast on our TVs. But on the other hand, we are overloaded with information, which can make things seem distant and clinical, and we have less connection to our local communities. Let me start with California and Craig, and then we'll go around the room.
Globalization is such a complex thing that
it's
hard to answer it simply. You know, I mean, there's aspects to it that connect us with each other, and then there's other aspects to it that are shifting power in the ways that all of you have just been talking about, and, you know, and marginalizing unheard of groups of people, just, you know, millions and millions at this point. So I don't, you know, if there was another, sometimes I think of one of the things that I teach at the graduate level is mythology from a psychological perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And to describe the oppressive aspects of globalization, I've started using the word giantization, because in mythology, a lot of times when things are going bad, the giants show up and they start running over the kingdom and they start crushing people. And, you know, they if someone was born in mythological times and brought up to our time, they would have no problem identifying who the giants of our day are.
Yes.
You know, so it becomes mythologically a question of how do you deal with the giants and what do they represent and so on. So in terms of giantization, I think it's been horribly oppressive. I mean, the activists have been talking about that for decades, you know. So there's other aspects to it that I think, you know, for instance, the fact that I can have this letter right in front of me that came from Japan yesterday, for instance, you know.
Do you want to read that to us?
Yeah, is this a good time?
Yeah, and then we'll
fits.
Yeah, yes, fits, I think. Fits. Please.
Okay, and a quick comment. I'm glad to do this because there's an aspect of the discussion of the Earth being a living being that I sometimes am not sure how to hold myself because it makes me uncomfortable, and that's when it begins. I don't know if we're doing that, but it begins to drift to the punishment paradigm, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. blaming, and, you know, you bad humans are being smashed because of this and that, you know. So I think it's important to hear from the people who are actually undergoing the tragedies and see how they're holding it, you know. So this letter says, I'm just going to read a couple of parts of it. Things here in Sendai have been rather surreal. that's an understatement.
Yeah.
We share supplies like water, food, and kerosene. We sleep lined up in one room. We eat by candlelight, and we share stories. It is actually warm, friendly, and beautiful. During the day, we help each other clean up the mess in our homes. And people sit in their cars looking at news on their navigation screens, or they line up to get drinking water when there's a source open. If someone has water running in their home, they put out a sign so that people can come and fill up their jugs and buckets. Utterly amazingly, this is somebody who's originally from America. Utterly amazingly, where I have been, there has been no looting, no pushing in lines. People leave their front door open, and people keep saying, you know, this is how it used to be in the old days when everyone helped one another. The quakes do keep coming. Last night they struck every 15 minutes. The sirens are constant, and the helicopters pass overhead often. We got water for only a few hours in our homes last night, and electricity finally came on this afternoon. We feel grubby. Here's the last part I wanted to... We feel grubby. But there are so much more important concerns than that for us now. I love this peeling away of non-essentials, living fully on the level of instinct and intuition, of caring, of what is needed for survival, not just for me, but this entire group. And then the last thing that he says is that he's surprised by what he calls the unexpected touches of beauty and the silence at night.
The silence at night. I love that. That's beautiful.
Except for the helicopters and sirens, but yeah.
Yeah. In between them, you know. Yeah.
And I heard today from someone who spoke to somebody in Japan, or heard from them, who said that for the first time where they live, despite all the horrendous tragedy that's around them, they can see all the stars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think with the electronic hum, that field of energy that comes from all things electronic, because that is kind of dead sometimes, you can see through the fog and see what's really there. And I think that, you know, that there may be a time where all people on the earth share in that reality in the next 18 to 24 months. I mean, it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not wishing it on anything, but if we look at the law of averages, you know, that is a major possibility, and we have to find a way to navigate through that in a very positive way. You know, out of great tragedy, out of this great poison came a great medicine, and we have to decide how to use that medicine to heal the people.
Ho Chi Minh had wrote a lot of poems, and one of the ones that stuck with me, the last lines, where one has to walk through the cold and desolation of winter before you can feel the warmth and beauty of spring.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
And that's part of existence that we have to deal with. But Tyrone, don't hang up. We're going to come to you in just 2 minutes here and let you make sure you get them before the end of the hour. But to finish Christina's question.
Globalization.
One of the things I want to posit about that is that globalization, it seems to me, in and of itself, is a natural process.
It's inevitable.
Human beings always traded. You know, but when you look at the native cultures in America, what we call now powwow sites, but they called them different things then, the different nations did. But nations from all over what we call America now gathered from all over to trade, to know each other, to trade tobacco for corn, for seashells from the West, from turquoise from the – I mean, so that's why you could find – turquoise among the Iroquois who had no turquoise, because people traded all across this earth always. So, and that's going to happen. I think globalization isn't so much a problem, because the fact that I can get chatted to is globalization. The fact that Craig is getting having a conversation with somebody on the ground in Japan is globalization. Mm-hmm. You know, that I can eat a mango is globalization. But it's the corporatization.
That's
of
what
globalization
I was going to say. That's what
that
I was going to say. What we've seen since the '90s, really, Clinton really put it on steroids, and it's continued. It's continued with Bush II and Obama. Is the globalization is inevitable, but what's happened in the last 20 years has been corporatizing globalization as well. We've created systems now where corporations are more powerful than governments, where a corporation can challenge an environmental law, can challenge the health care law, because they say it's an unfair trade practice, and go to the World Trade Organization, and a democratically passed law becomes a unfair trade practice. I mean, it's obscene. And these NAFTA-type laws, these are designed really not as corporate – not as free trade agreements, but corporate trade agreements. It's total propaganda when they say this is free trade. It's not free trade. This is corporate trade. We allow capital – you know, to shift freely and corporations to shift freely. We don't allow workers to shift freely. And we're going to find when we finally mature, and it may not be in our lifetimes, but when globalization has matured, we're going to find that the idea of boundaries for countries was also a fiction that we never even considered. But I mean, that's where we're going to end up. It's going to be, you know, a century from now, but that's where we'll end up.
Okay, absolutely. I do want to get Tyrone in here. Okay. Let me just get Tyrone. I've been promising this poor man he could get on the air. I want to get him on the air. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in on this conversation. And Tyrone, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Tyrone. Welcome.
Welcome. I've been on – I'm in patience. I've been on the line for a little while, but that's all good.
You're here now.
I was just wondering about the level – are the people in America aware of the level of hypocrisy about – what happened with President Mubarak? And we have been supporting this man for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
No, and the people, and finally, they said, look, enough already. This whole thing is a fraud. You know, they had enough. And you just can't keep people down forever. And the thing, well, with Muammar, he said, well, look, I'm not going out like that. Okay? You're going to have to drag me out. And he's been even... in power even longer. But how many bases do we have worldwide? 730 plus.
More than that.
Mm-hmm. That's scary. That is scary. World domination, okay? But I think the people in America, we have a bill to pay that hasn't been paid yet.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's coming up. It's coming. And it's a painful thing because I'm not worried for me. I mean, I'm halfway across my bridge in life, and it's okay. I'm okay with that. But I'm just worried about for the younger people and the kids and the innocent people who had nothing to do with it, you know. It's just sad to watch, you know. I teach my kids, you know, to be multicultural. I speak Italian. My Spanish is getting a lot better.
Good.
And English. And I lived in Italy for 5 years. I served the flag with my wife. And it's just hard to watch what's happening. The people will get their nerve up and say enough is enough in America. And Gil Scott-Heron said the revolution will not be televised.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is now.
Yes, it is. And it's,
you it's know, YouTube.
It is now, but we forget. They don't want to talk about the one that's coming in America.
It's coming. It's here. It's, you know, Tyrone, one thing you said I wanted to comment on, which I think is, you know, right on point, is the bill is going to be coming to pay. And, in fact, I think it's here now. Our economy cannot support, and it's more like 1,100 military bases and outposts.
Lord have mercy.
The largest empire in world history. You know, the British Empire at its peak had 37 military bases around the world. We're at 1,100 plus. And so we can't afford that reality. And I think the myths of America are also starting to falter. We're starting to learn that the challenge we have, I really think, as Americans to change things is it's a much more sophisticated thing than what they dealt with in Egypt. You know, in Egypt, right, they had a one-party dictatorship. Here we have a two-party dictatorship, and people get confused about that. They can't see the Democrats are funded by the same people as Republicans, and they throw Bush out, put Obama in, throw Obama out, put Romney in, put Romney out, Clinton in. You know, it's just, you know, it's a nonsensical game. We've got to recognize the two parties are not represent any of us. We got to break that. And the same with the media. In Egypt, you have a state TV, and here we have a corporate TV. It looks like it's free, but it's not.
I think the very interesting thing is that most Americans are the people who lived in the empire that don't know they're living in the empire.
Exactly.
It's the fog.
Wow.
And it's a myth. I think that the fog is breaking, though, particularly with the economic crisis and this whole myth of the American dream. First of all, the American dream for a lot of people in America was never a dream. It was quite a nightmare.
A lot, right?
So now the rest of America is catching up to it. And everybody's like, wait, what's going on? What's holding, you know? And even the corporate entities even had a last-ditch effort by seeping into the churches with the so-called prosperity gospels. You see what I'm saying? People praying that their mortgages would be paid. Meanwhile, they're giving their life savings over to Pastor blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the day, what they realized was that the resources that they needed to be cultivated from within. And so now people are really trying to figure out what is this. But I think it's so ironic. The people that lived in the empire that are funding the beast don't know that they're in the beast. And so now the fog is lifting.
And just because we're almost out of time, Craig, I want you to, I'm going to close with a minute or so thought from you.
Oh, I just, when the caller mentioned something about the bill is coming due, you know, I mean, on so many levels, we've been overspending our earthly resources, not to mention our economic ones and all across the board, you know, and now all these bills are showing up. And I wake up almost every day thinking, you know, if I balance my checkbook like this, like our government does, I'd be in jail by now.
You know?
And on that note, I do want to thank Dr. Craig Chilquist for joining us from California, from the Department of Conscience and Transformative Studies at JFK University. Craig, good to have you on the air with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
The Reverend Mother Meredith Moyes, great to have you on the show, priest in the North American All Catholic Church.
Thank you.
And Kevin Zeese, director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics.
Lift in the fog.
Lift in the fog. Good to have you here, too. And I want to wish everybody out there a very happy St. Patrick's Day. Don't forget, your president, first African-American president, is also part Irish. So have a good St. Patrick's Day. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. We'll take a very brief break. We'll come back and take a tour of Chapel's Country Creamery, a really interesting free-range dairy farm in one of our explorations on Delmarva. So do not go away.